testing 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. Can you hear me? Okay, we are at it again. Welcome back to the Flaws of Attraction podcast on a May evening. It's a Saturday, and I wanted to pop on. We have two episodes coming for you guys soon. This episode is with a dear friend of mine named Alyssa, and we chronicle her journey through Hillsong. And I know that Hillsong has been a burning topic, very top of mind over the past year or so, specifically around the time where the documentary was released, unveiling some of the horrors behind Hillsong. And if you are here because you know of Hillsong, then you have either partaken in the music, or you've been adjacent to this journey, or you may just have heard of it. But either way, Hillsong has integrated its way into our lives in such a wild way. Like, it's kind of like when water settles to the bottom of a vessel. It really has filled everything up. And I wanted to do this episode. Oh my God, here's the pedal pub. A moment for the pedal pub, because it's basically the summer now, so we have to have that in there. You guys also probably are wanting a little bit of an update from me, so I'm so grateful to be back and to be sharing again. It feels like it's taken like pulling stones for me to sit down to get here, and I love to lead by vulnerability and just share that over the past 6 months, the past year has just not been the easiest year for me. I've had a lot of transitions, and I've had a lot of momentous manifestations, like moving into a new loft. And, you know, ever since like December, my world kind of turned upside down a little bit, and there was really nothing traumatic that happened, but it was like a culmination of events that occurred. I think like the truth of some situations revealed themselves to me. And other than that, I also packed on a lot of responsibilities onto my plate. And I've also been battling a really low, and just have not been able to climb out of it. I actually just discovered Olivia from What the Juice podcast. I think that's what it's called. Some of you may be familiar with her because she's in the health and wellness space. And I'm in the midst of listening to a podcast that she's sharing on how she had to come to the confrontation of giving up coffee because the caffeine that she was intaking was serving as like a placeholder, or like a way of numbing her lows. And for me, like, battling low lows has been an ongoing life kind of battle for me, I guess. I've always been hypersensitive. I've always considered having moderate depression. Like, I did go to a physician once, and they were like, yeah, you have moderate depression. And I was like, okay, yeah, no worries. And I'm still kind of in this place. And I think there's a big amount of reasons for it. The fact that this year was just very jarring. Like, I had no idea that leaving one job and going to the next would just put me through the ringer in terms of my personal identity. Like, I basically feel like I don't know who I am anymore, just because I operate in the day-to-day so differently. I'm in a totally different environment, one that has really great things about it. However, it's just like different. And I voiced that on like another podcast, and it's still like a reoccurring thing. So for me, that, and then I also have been working with an incredible client on the side of work. And I love what I do both at my job, at my day job, and at for this client. But yeah, the burnout has been a little real. So the reason you guys haven't been hearing from me has been that the responsibilities are heavier than my shoulders can bear at the moment. And that is more than okay. There's definitely going to be seasons of flow, and I'm super into this concept of going through different seasons and different characters and unlocking different versions of yourself, and how seasons come and close at an end. And I've seen in myself, like in the past, I've seen myself really dive deep into health and wellness, dive deep into doing the work on myself. And those were the days of my life that I was truly the happiest. Like, it all started for me in 2020. That's like where this podcast was birthed out of. I needed to go on my deconstruction journey and I'm still on it, but it's feeling very good. And I found TBM, which you guys have heard about, and I found self-healing. And for some reason, I had so much momentum. And then all of a sudden, as things do, the momentum just kind of took a big pause. It was like, I think what it was I don't know, I had set up some incredible habits for myself, which included like daily walks and making sure I did my deep imagining meditations every day. And because of that, I wasn't actually consuming any media. Like I wasn't consuming any television for like a good 6 months. And those 6 months were like pivotal for me. I was feeling and attuning and tuning into myself. I had never done it before. I was channeling. I was having dreams. I was like channeling. I really was channeling. And I remember one day being like, oh, you know, like if I break my habit this one day, like it's fine just to watch a TV show and to get back into that. And ever since that, it kind of like took me off grid. It became my escapism again to binge Netflix TV shows. And I've never quite been able to get back into the same momentum, the habit that was so strong. And I'm not a proponent that you have to do things like in binary ways, or that watching Netflix is bad. I just think that developing compounding habits is something you have to be really intentional with, because your discipline in your intentionality with compounding habits will change your life. However, if you neglect those habits, they're not going to have those compounding effects. That's just like physics, you know? So when I started this journey with Flaws, it was really coming from this place of needing an outlet to share my stories and to document my health journey and my returning to my body and my attunement. And this year has felt so strange for me, being on this podcast and enjoying sharing and enjoying having a platform, but at the same time just knowing that I'm not well. And it's so funny because like it's the stories that we tell ourselves, right? Like yesterday night I was out with friends. We went to a brewery down the block. It's so beautiful, just to set the scene. It was like outdoors with like, you know, the twinkle lights, and I was having a hard tea. I was like, I'm not really into beer at the moment, but I was sitting there with them and I made some comment about being unwell, and they were kind of all shocked. Like they were like, oh really? And I was like, yeah, because this narrative in my head that I am not doing my best, like I am not in the best era of my life, is a story that I've told myself, and it has become true to a degree. And part of me truly believes like if I could shift my narrative, and I will shift my narrative because that's probably the next season of what's happening for me. But if I was not so convinced that that was my reality, then it wouldn't be, right? And a lot of your feelings and emotions are valid. Like my feelings and emotions are valid that this year's really taken it out of me. But at the same time, I've really endorsed my feelings by coming up with these stories that don't serve me. So long story short, because you guys are like, where are you going with this? I love Flaws. I love having a podcast. I love health and wellness. And my major focus this year has been on career, and it hasn't been on wellness and wholeness and my holistic journey, which I had some crazy revelations years ago. Like the revelations were like, essentially, I started to believe, and I still do believe, that doing the self-worth work is the thing that leads you to success and those manifestations. And just hustling and being part of this Western society, like corporate, you know, rod-dogging it through life, trying to make an extra cent, that can be so depleting. And you can have all the success in the world, but if you don't work on yourself, if you don't sit down with yourself and really get intentional about what is your why, you won't be happy. And because this year I haven't really been that happy, I've had to kind of take a look and zoom out a bit and ask myself that question, like, why am I not happy? Especially because I've manifested some incredible things. I am materially manifested the dream life that I want, and I'm still here in Calgary, but I'm in the perfect loft with like the funnest job in the industry that I want to do, making this podcast, and I'm still unhappy. A little breaking conversation. There could be other reasons for this, like my SIBO, my gut dysbiosis, my, you know, that whole thing. So I'm recognizing to have a little bit more grace on myself. And it's not that everything is always bad. It's just that my subconscious is really wired to look for the bad. I also have to zoom out a little bit and like really reflect on when in my life was I not experiencing this. And I had a good couple years of feeling really satiated and joyful. And I think what happened for me was I had a Saturn return moment where my world got rocked up because I kind of opened Pandora's box and realized that I wasn't being compensated as fairly as I thought I should be for the work that I was doing. And I've always been a really intentional hard worker, especially in the industry that I love, which is this one. But it's put a fire under my ass because I never want to be wrongfully compensated ever again. And this has been like an ongoing area of fire and anger for me that has prevented me from really feeling happy, because before I realized that I probably wasn't getting compensated to the degree that I should have been, I was happy. I was honestly just like, you know, taking my evening slowly and enjoying my friendships with my coworkers and my friends and not comparing myself. But the more knowledge, I was like, I never wanted to know this knowledge, but when you find out, like, it's just, it can be a little heart-wrenching. And I think, especially because, like, you know, you're unfortunately in the society, compensation is what you work for. It is how you survive. It is how you enjoy life. It's how your life can be better. It's, you know, I believe in manifesting items and I believe that things can come to you, but I also just believe that people should be compensated fairly. And I know it's really difficult in this particular era of time, but yeah, it just made me unhappy. And so most of my journey this past year has been focused on building the infrastructure for me to have the ability to understand how much I should be compensated for my work and feel very confident about those numbers, like running the math and understanding the math behind it. And then also having all of my portfolio and my website built and the back end of my business for design, photography, videography, and whatever the case may be, whatever services I choose to offer, just having that on the back end of me, so that while like Instagram and TikTok and all these things fluctuate in and out of our lives, the body of work that I've built can stand and I can have that security. And so that has been like a major motivator for me this past year, which is probably why I haven't been spending as much time on the podcast. But yeah, I want to lead with vulnerability because I know that stories have power to affect how you operate in life. And I think it's very interesting to come out of a church world or a spiritual world and out of these circles and dynamics where you have to play the part, you know. And what I'm alluding to here right now is just kind of these societal constructs that happen and these dynamics that happen in nuclear circles or nuclear family circles is what I'm trying to say. And there's just like psychology and sociology that happens. And I don't know, I'm an Enneagram 4, so I feel things really deeply. And I'm also, you know, I'm not making the worst income. I just know that it's really easy to not advocate for yourself and for that to kind of shoot you in the butt later in life. And I think, you know, I turned 30 in April. It's May 27th now. I was like gearing up to do a whole episode on 30 lessons I've learned in 30 years, which I still hope to do. But I've had to kind of reflect over the past 10 years about what I would have done differently, if I would have done things differently. I'm very proud of my 20s and the friendships and the dynamics, and every place that I've worked, every client I've worked with, every place I've worked in has been the right thing. And I've also had to reflect on, like, when was I advocating for myself, and when wasn't I, and when did I have the vision to know when to advocate for myself? Because I think a lot of the times I crave security, and I crave equality and security, and I have never been that much of a goal, motivated by goals, I guess. So long story short, I would probably, if I could tell my 20-year-old self something, is I would tell her to find more mentorship. Find more mentorship, and to not be afraid to ask people for their advice about your financial situation or your skills or where you need to up level. And I would just tell her that you can do it, you will do it, and that it just serves you to advocate for yourself. And I think that would have really been a huge game changer for me, as I see other people who are quite younger than me who are actively advocating for themselves, and that's not something that I was doing. So this is a bit of a tangent, because I think it's just really important for me on a microphone to be raw and real with my audience about where I'm at. And I know that I can unlock different types of characters in my life that will serve me. So a huge passion of mine in this manifestation health and wellness world, especially when I get into times of feeling very low, is about basically looking at the story that I am telling myself, and then looking at the potential stories that I could be telling myself. So I'm really in love with this concept of unlocking new characters and embodying new characters. And I think the way that you show up in the world is how people will perceive you. And I think one of my biggest lessons this year has been in perception, that perception matters, because people will literally treat you differently by the way that you dress and that you hold yourself and you take care of yourself. And as authentic as I love to be by putting my heart on my sleeve and being really candid in conversation like this, it's also incredibly important to realize that you will operate differently if you are wearing certain clothing versus other types of clothing, or if you are carrying yourself in a certain type of way. So one of the best ways to get out of a rut, and this is me kind of sharing things that I am doing right now, is to make little changes to the way that you present yourself in the world. So for me, something that I'm actively trying to do right now, because I have been in a slump, is being really intentional about the different metals that I wear. So actually, my friend Sarah, she's incredible at putting on silver and claiming silver and black as her staple pieces in her prescription to her character. And it's worked incredibly well for her. And she's finally popping off on TikTok, and everybody go follow her, Leather in July. You will love her outfits. And she's a great example of someone who is, she's not like really cosplaying her way through life. She's fully integrated into the character that she shows up in the world, and she uses clothing and the metals that she wears and the way that she shows up as like her form of manifestation, because it gets you places, you know? So for me, what this looks like is I start with a Pinterest board, and I essentially just haphazardly add things that I like into a Pinterest board, and from there I distill it down into a theme, and I will actively embody this character for a week. My favorite one as of recent was the fairy aesthetic. I was like, I'm going to be fairy core this week. And I looked up all this like kind of fairy ethereal themed content, and I put it into a board. I looked at different jewelry and different ways that you could present yourself in this way. And I embodied that for a week and it felt really strange. I wasn't actively looking like a fairy, guys. I was just having emblems of earth tones and emblems of a certain hairstyle. Like, I wore my hair really wavy. And I'm really into braids. I really think that braids can really updo a look. And so that was something that I actively did for 1 week, and it felt incredible. Obviously, you need to make it attainable to you. But my friend Misha, she actually sent me this incredible TikTok the other day about this girl who was taking this concept and taking it to the next level. And she, like, it basically is this idea of giving yourself like an alter ego, right? Like, you don't want to go to the gym. Well, your alter ego, Jessica, she loves the gym. So when you embody yourself as Jessica and you act like her, then eventually it starts to compound and become a habit and embodies into your life. This girl on TikTok was doing this, and she is super into this concept of being in different seasons of your life. Like, for example, being on Sex and the City or Gossip Girl and just pretending, like delusional pretending, that you are the main character of a TV show. So I think for her first season, she talked about being Carrie Bradshaw and acting every day as Carrie Bradshaw would, like wearing more colorful outfits, being in public, just having the funnest time. And also talking about the seasons of the TV show that you can find yourself in. So not necessarily controlling what this looks like, but just having an overall generalized idea of what's happening in your life. Like, oh, I feel I'm in my season 2 era right now, and we're going to do stuff for the plot. We're going to say yes to more for the plot. And I think having this concept can really help with this type of manifestation practice, which I'm going to title delusional manifestation. It's not as much like neuromanifestation, which I love neuromanifestation, but it's this concept of you creating a narrative and acting on it until it becomes a reality. And because the stories that I've had over the past year for my life have not been the best story, I am actively working on my seasons and the characters that I want to embody in this coming season of my life. I definitely feel like this is a season 1 close to a season 1 for me. I think my season 1 started when I moved into this new loft, and I think the winter has been kind of the setting of the story. This girl who has had a lot of journeying through her 20s and getting to a point of workaholism and realizing that there's more fun to be had in the world. So that's kind of the short narrative that I felt right now. And we're going to be doing things for the plot. We're going to be dressing differently for the plot. I love to go in with like a specific nail color. I feel like that is like a really hot, fast way to get into a new character. So maybe your character, you could give her a name if you wanted. You could call her Jessica. Sarah Jessica Parker. Jessica. Maybe Jessica only wears red nails and she doesn't drink coffee. Maybe she's an early morning person, and maybe Jessica is a runner. And I feel like thinking of yourself and cosplaying that character for like a good 30 days, it's going to give you an accelerator into a new manifestation. I will report back on the next episode about the finalized character that I decide to embody and what she's like, because there are habits that I want to kick to the curb. There's things that I am excited to embody in a different season and era of my life. And I think also something that I've had to really focus and learn about has been looking at the stories that I've invented for myself and how much I've attached my identity to them. So if I feel like an injustice has been, like in my story, if there's like a dramatic situation that happens, how I feel that drama is warranted or my reaction is warranted, and maybe coming to a place of challenging if that narrative is even true. I went on a walk like yesterday, and I was really distilling what my manifestations were down to like one word, because I was like, I have a lot of really incredible things. I don't have like the biggest house in the world, and I don't have the biggest income in the world, but in general, I have a lot of the things that I want. And I started to realize that my unhappiness was coming from a place of perpetually living a life that has had drama in it, and how my manifestation, my perfect manifestation, would be harmony and coming to a place where my world was filled with harmony. Not to say that conflict is bad. I love conflict. I think conflict can grow a person, especially when two people can come together and take conflict on by the bullhorns. But I realized that underneath it all, underneath the success, underneath the money, underneath the podcast, underneath like what I wanted, like what I truly want is just harmony. And it's had me reflect on areas of drama in my life and when I started to see drama in my life. And I think I've been living ever since I was like, I don't know, in grade one or grade two, I've seen drama every single year of my life. And it hasn't been, I mean, I guess it could be for the plot, but it has not been harmonious. And just kind of deciding that the mature, grounded version of me, my manifestation, my true form of manifestation that I want to call in is harmony, has been very revealing. It definitely has made me question how I perceive my own personal narratives, where drama is involved in my personal narratives. So that was kind of fun, a little fun catch-up chat. Other than that, I just got back from Portugal with my fam. It was bomb. It was super fun. It had its own challenges too, but it was incredible. I basically spent most of the time by the pool. We explored the Algarve, which is stunning. Probably one of the more stunning places I've ever been in my life. And it felt harmonious. It felt like a breath of fresh air. My friend Leah, right before I left, channeled a little prayer for me that I was going to have some things really uprooted for me there and have some revelations. And I think the revelations have come in some like familial things, but also just a sense of peace and just knowing that my ideal life is a life full of harmony and peace. So I'm taking that away with me. But getting back to what this episode's going to be about. So I feel kind of bad because Alyssa was going to be one of the first ever guests on the podcast, and it didn't happen. It finally happened in December. December is in the story of my perceived story when shit hit the fan for me, and I have not been able to show up in the way that I've wanted. However, we had this incredible conversation about her experience with Hillsong, and I love when people are honest and true about what they've gone through and they spill the tea. And she sure spilt the tea on Hillsong and sexuality and her experiences, and I just want to give her the most love and the biggest shout out for being patient with me for the past like 2 months that I've promised her that this would be the next episode out, and it just has been sitting here on my laptop. Hi, Alyssa. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Jill.
Oh my gosh. It's so fun to have you on. This has been like, we've been trying to make this happen for so long. So I'm very excited for today.
Yeah, me too. I think it's been a year, if like more than that, that we've been trying to do this.
More. Yeah. It's awesome. Okay. How would you feel about introducing yourself and sharing a little bit about your cultural upbringing and your background?
Sure. So my name's Alyssa. I would say my last name, but it's kind of embarrassing. So no, it's not. It's Cherkov. Kind of sounds like jerk off.
Oh, that's so funny. I've never thought about that before.
I mean, that welcome to my childhood getting made fun of. But that's my name. I grew up very religious, actually. Both my parents, their parents were pastors. So it was like I was a third generation Christian being brought up in the family of God. So fun. And I was gung-ho. Like I was full out my whole life. Like I was homeschooled a lot growing up. So my only social interaction was like at church, in youth group, Sunday school. When it was time for high school, my parents were like, oh, where do you want to go? And I was like, I'll go to the Christian school. Yeah, that's that's where I feel comfortable.
Something a little familiar.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And then like, obviously I went to Christian Bible college as well. Well, Christian Pentecostal. And yeah, that was my whole life up until recently.
That's so wild. Okay, so let's dive in a little deeper. But also, I also need to ask you what your astrology, Enneagram, typology systems are. Can we just like, just give us a little bit from that quick?
So my astrological sign is Scorpio, obviously. I am pretty sure, but I'm not absolutely sure. My moon is Cancer and my rising is Sagittarius.
Okay.
I think. So and then
you and I are like of the three, I have a Cancer moon and Sag rising.
Ooh, look at that.
And I love Scorpios. Like you guys kill me. Oh, dagger to my heart. Literally takes me out.
So sassy, so emotional.
Yeah.
I love it. I love it though.
I love that.
And then my Enneagram is a 7, if you couldn't tell. I feel like we talked about this when we went for coffee in Vancouver last year or something.
Yeah.
I'm like a classic 7 through and through. Like I avoid pain at all costs in my life. Everything good and happy and joyful, I'm like, that's my shit. And anything that's tough or difficult or emotionally exhausting, get it away from me. Yeah.
Okay. So interesting. Cool.
Yeah.
So circling back to your upbringing, you said you were third generation. So give me a picture of your family's denomination and their background in the church. And like, were your parents like both pastors or did they come into that like later in life?
So neither of my parents were ever pastors, but their parents were.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah. So on my dad's side, his parents are like fully Pentecostal, very missionary based, like they're constantly traveling and going and doing missionary. They're also immigrants to Canada. So they were born, they're Russian. They were born like, I think it's modern day Kazakhstan is where they were born, like just outside China. And then they had to flee because of communism. So they went from Russia to Hong Kong, took a boat from Hong Kong to Australia, had some of my aunts and uncles there, and then took a boat from Australia to Vancouver.
That's so wild.
Yeah. And through all of that, like faith was a huge part of their upbringing. Like my grandma will still tell stories about how like God saved them and some of her siblings died because they didn't have enough food or they didn't have the things that they needed to get by. And that she'll tell these like really emotional stories that still make her cry about how like if they didn't have God, they wouldn't have their lives. So that's how intense and like emotionally tied their religion was to their whole life. And then by the time they were raising my dad and his siblings, it was like really strict, really, I don't even know the word, like strict is the best way I can describe it, but very like legalistic. Harsh. Yeah. Very legalistic.
Yeah.
To the point where like my dad couldn't go to the movie theaters because the demons in the movie theater could, you know, influence him.
Was in that type of era, I'm assuming this was like around the 80s, there was like the Satanic Panic and like all of that.
Yeah.
Probably did not help at all.
No, not at all.
No.
And like I'm pretty sure my grandma's father was an alcoholic and so they had this whole like thing. They're still like this, like they won't drink alcohol. They don't want to be around people who are drinking alcohol. For a really long time, they were pretty hectic about tattoos too, like not being okay with them, thinking they're like very sinful. So even getting tattoos was like a huge problem for them. So that's kind of the landscape my dad was raised in. And then my mom's parents, my grandpa's a pastor on that side as well. And they were very like moved around all the time as well, just following mm-hmm. the call of the Lord. So my mom will tell stories about how like they were uprooted all the time when she was a kid, constantly moving around the country. And my grandpa on my mom's side is very like doom and gloom preacher. So oh, wow. Very about the end times, all about like God's like revenge on the devil, and like sin is the worst possible thing and you need to like avoid it at all costs, and like we need to be prepared for the end times. Super wow. intense, very legalistic mm-hmm. too. So my parents get together and they're very young when they get married. They're like 19. And
oh my God, that's so young. Like,
yeah,
I can't like, okay, I'm 29 right now and I spend a lot of time with like in the dance circle, like 18-year-olds or like, you know, like the it fluctuates.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I cannot like 19 years old for me. That's such a throwback. Like that's such a long time ago.
Right.
It's a lot. It's a lot. Yeah.
It's you're so young at 19.
Yeah, you're so young.
You're a child still. Like
you are a kid. Like. You're basically 16.
Yeah.
Right?
Like there's yeah. no way, especially my parents, like they hadn't moved away. They'd never lived on their own. You have no life experience as a 19-year-old, having not even gone to college. Like just, you're literally getting married to someone that you've been dating for like maybe under a year and then having kids right away. It's wild.
That's wild. Yeah.
It's crazy. Yeah. And I like now, years later, like my parents are divorced and I have a really good relationship with both of them separately. And I can understand now a lot of the things I didn't growing up about why they were the way they are. Now I look at it and I'm like, oh my God, I feel so sorry for you guys. Like you had no chance to unravel your own beliefs for yourself. You just like, you were forced to get married. Then you had all your kids by the time you were 26. And then had to figure it out as you were also trying to raise children. Like it's just such a mess.
It's a hard journey. It's like we've heard enough stories that it's doable, but it's really, really, really hard. And I think like discovering your authenticity, it doesn't really happen until you're in your mid-20s. I don't think.
No.
At all.
No.
100%. So like, even to be like unpacking that. So that must have been really tough for you growing up, just to be like in the midst of that, as well as coming from a background where, well, okay, going back to your background quick, just because I want to relate to you, is that I come from a Mennonite side. My mom is Mennonite.
Oh,
so
yeah.
We, like, same story, essentially, like, a lot of my background, they were exiled and brought into Kazakhstan. And then from there, luckily, my direct family, I think they came to Canada before then. But there were some people from my family who did the camps there in Russia.
Yeah.
And who knows where they are? Like, Ukraine. Yeah. I don't know. Like, who knows? So, just really interesting parallels. But my family... Yeah, so my side was more Mennonite, Protestant, so not, like, as Pentecostal. So tell me a little bit about, like, what it was like growing up in a Pentecostal upbringing, because that is wild.
Well, it was only really Pentecostal when we went and visited my dad's side of the family.
Okay.
My mom and dad, like, the type of churches I bounced around in a lot as a kid, because my parents would kind of, like, find a church, and then either my mom wouldn't be happy with it or my dad wouldn't be happy. So I've been in every type of church environment. Like, we went evangelical, non-denominational, like, Pentecostal. We've done all of them. Mm-hmm. And, like, where we ended up landing and going to church the most was usually non-denominational or evangelical. Yeah. So that's, like, those are the people who are, like, we're not into the spooky spiritual stuff and we're not like so harsh with all the legalism. So we're just going to like float in the middle and like try and figure it out. That was kind
of. I can see that.
Yeah.
That, I mean, that sounds pretty healthy.
Like, right?
Of all the places you could choose. Without us like understanding now, like when we unpack it all.
Yeah.
But there's a lot going on underneath the surface.
Yeah, seriously.
Okay, so then you were growing up homeschooled as well.
Oh my God.
What was your experience? What was your experience like with spirituality growing up?
I feel like I was always a really spiritual kid. Like, before anyone really told, well, I mean, growing up in church, you're always learning about all the stuff you're supposed to do. So praying, reading your Bible, all of that. But I remember having like a really vivid dream when I was 2 or 3. And I don't know if this is because of Sunday school and like the horror stories of like the end of the world. But I remember having this really intense dream that I was standing on the ground and the like ground started breaking apart and people were falling through. But then these angels were coming from heaven and taking people up. And my dream, gosh. Yeah, like a really vivid, I can still see it in my mind when I think of it. And my dream ended where I was like on the ground and the ground started shaking beneath me. And I didn't know whether I was going to be like falling through the cracks down to hell or an angel was going to come and save me. And that's the first kind of memorable moment. And I remember I like woke my mom up in the middle of the night and she made me like invite Jesus into my heart. Oh my God. And so from there, that started
like,
it for
what
me.
What is your mom supposed to do? Right? Like, based off of her framework, right? Exactly. Like, she probably was like, okay, let's bring some peace, and this is how I know to bring it in.
Right.
But, like, also kind of complex for an 8-year-old. Yeah.
Yeah. So, from there, I think I always took it really seriously since I was a little kid. I was like, okay, this is real. I'm going all in. I was always praying, like, always. And not even in a kind of spiritual format sense. Like, I wasn't like, dear Lord, bless this day, bless this. It was just like a constant conversation with who I thought was my heavenly father, I guess.
Right.
So like throughout anything, like I always would just spend time by myself in my room and I would like talk to God or whatever.
Yeah.
And I remember that a lot through my childhood. I was a journaler, so I would journal and I would pray all this stuff, like always writing in my journal.
Yeah.
And I tried really hard from a young age to be a good Christian. Like, I was absolutely bought in for sure. Like, I never questioned it. There was never a thought in my head of like, oh, this isn't real. Like, I was like, it's real. I'm in it. I'm going to do everything I need to do and life's going to be perfect.
Yeah. Yeah. And then also growing up in like homeschool environment and then mostly Christian environment, you just have a reinforcement. Like, when I was started to unpack stuff, I was like, how can I unpack this? It's like, my understanding of God is like the sky is blue. Like, that's just what life, like, there is no it's not even like a thought.
No.
It's just like, this is reality. So,
yeah.
Okay. So, like, what happened? Tell me more. Like,
it's so funny because I'll have friends. Well, I don't really know if I'll call them friends anymore. I'm not as close with them, but they'll be like, how could you have walked away? Like, you were so full of faith. You believed it so much. And like we were just saying, it's not like it was ever an option to believe it. It's not like it was ever presented to me as, well, this is one belief out of many. It's like, just as I thought, like, rain is falling from the clouds and the sun shines, like all that stuff. Like you just said, I thought that about God being real. And about my faith and about the church. Like, I didn't even know, like, because I grew up in such a bubble of Christianity, of like not really going to school with kids who weren't religious, like only having social interaction at youth group. I was in this bubble and I didn't even know you could not be religious.
Right.
Till I was so much older.
Like,
Like, I was in high school before I was like, oh, wait, some of you guys aren't religious?
Yeah.
That's a thing? And they're like, yeah.
Well, because you and I went to the same high school. So, like, I felt like our high school is so strange now because I just went to my 10-year reunion.
Oh, yeah.
And it was, like, mostly Christian. Like, truly, like, they were like, we are living the embodiment of Christianity. I was like, wow, cool.
Yeah.
Because, like, back in high school, I really was like, you guys aren't taking this seriously enough.
Yes.
Like, I felt like that.
Girl, you and me both. Oh, that was my...
Oh, my God, that's so funny.
My entire high school experience, I was like, I am trying so hard to be good, and, like, none of you guys are doing what you're supposed to do. Like...
Yeah.
Yeah, so funny. Now I look back and I cringe at myself, but...
Oh, same. Same. But, like, it's universal, I think.
Oh, yeah. Seriously.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But, yeah, so I... And then obviously I went away to Bible college after going to a Christian high school. So the bubble of my life just continued. Like,
okay. So when did you decide that you were like, I'm going to Hillsong? Because the type of Christianity that you and I were a part of, like when I knew you in high school, and like I was involved in Tequila Monday, which is here in Calgary.
Yeah.
Like, it's like really cool. Like, it's not like dull church. It's not like boring church. The church that I got involved with that kept my like self-going was marketed very well, very emotionally impactful, had like very heavy tones of personal development with it.
Oh, yeah.
And I also was like, I founded like a like-minded community, so there was no reason for me to challenge it. So like, what made you interested in going to Hillsong, and like, was that your experience as well?
Yeah, I think I was in the same boat as you. Like, I found Experience Church when I was in high school, and I really gravitated towards them. I had some friends who went to Tequila Monday, and I would go to every once in a while. It wasn't like my main place, because I think at that point in high school, it was still too Pentecostal for me. Like, I was still kind of freaked out by all the like, woohoo. So that wasn't my main spot, but I would go. I loved the worship. And that was the big part of the reason I picked Hillsong, was because I loved the music. I was always musical growing up. Mm-hmm. I taught myself guitar in eighth grade. I loved to sing. I was on like the high school chapel team or whatever. And I knew I wanted to do something with music, but also be involved in church. And I mean, you and I both know Hillsong, their music is like in every church, all the churches.
Yeah, like, it's also like in like the mall.
Yeah.
Like it's transcended.
It's on fucking TikTok.
Christianity.
Like,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Growing up, like that was always the music I listened to from when I was little. And I didn't even know they had a college. I was just like doing research on different Bible colleges around the world because I knew I didn't want to stay in Calgary. And so I was looking at the Bethel one first before I ever.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Thank God I didn't do that either. Oh, my God.
No, thank God. Sorry to anyone who's gone. Yeah.
Rest in peace. But yeah, so I found Hillsong. I just stumbled across it on the internet. It was like an ad that came up and I could not believe it. I was like, oh, this church that I love so much, they've got a college. It's in Australia. It's the only one in the world. Mm-hmm. And they had a fantastic marketing team. So made it seem like this was going to be the most incredible experience of my life. I'm going to be living by the beach. I'm going to be like mentored by these Hillsong people I've looked up to my whole life. Like it's just going to be the most incredible adventure. Like they called it an adventure. Yeah. And that's what I wanted. I wanted to go on an adventure.
Oh my God, Enneagram 7.
Yes, okay. I'm showing myself. That was my thought process.
You're like that.
As soon as it was like adventure, overseas, beach, new country, I was like, all right, I'm in. And I was 18 at the time. Mm-hmm. I had no money to go to Hillsong. So I took student loans out so I could go, which was so stupid in hindsight, but whatever, I did it. And it was so crazy. Like no one told me, hey, you're 18, you're going to go move across the world and be away from your friends and family for like how many years? You think that's a good idea? I was like, absolutely, let's go. So hopped on a plane and moved there on my own. Did not go with a single person. Like I had some relatives in Australia on my grandma's side.
At least you had a touch point. Yeah.
So they like picked me up from the airport and I stayed with them my first week. And then I found a place to live and it was like, all right, now we're here.
See you later.
Yeah.
Okay. So that would have been wild.
Yeah.
Did you have flatmates? Because I went to Austria. I went to Hillsong to visit a friend for a little bit. Did you have flatmates?
Yeah. So they had two different ways you could find housing. You could either do it through the college and they would place you in a house with four or five other roommates, sometimes six. But I knew I didn't want to go through them because it was a lot more expensive. I wouldn't be able to choose where I was living or who I was living with. So I don't even know how I met the girl. It was on like a Hillsong College students Facebook page that I'd been accepted into because I was going. And I met this girl randomly and she knew of a house that was looking for another roommate. And so that's how I found my place.
Gotcha. Yeah.
So I had five other roommates, I think.
Crazy. Yeah. Okay. Very fun. So, okay. Yeah. What was like the thing that broke the camel's back? Like when you were there, what was it like? What was good? What was bad? And like, when did you start to be like, okay, something's off for me? Or was that during your Hillsong experience or was that after?
A little bit of both. What it was really odd to me from the get-go when I got to Hillsong that something – like I bought into it, of course, at the time. But looking back now, I'm like, oh, my God, I should have trusted my gut. But why would I? Because, you know, when you grow up in church, they tell you not to trust your gut, that your heart is sinful and whatever. So they told us in our first semester that, like, it was so important that we cut ties with home when we were there so that we could like fully embrace the process of being at Hillsong. And your first year, they would use language of like, it's the tearing down, the cutting away. It's like the breaking year where where all the things that shouldn't be in your life get removed. And then like from there we can build. And at the time I was like, oh, that seems like really intense, but whatever. I trust these guys like 100%. It's Hillsong. I worshiped them basically. And yeah. Now I'm like, oh, well, of course that's what they want to do when you're fresh there. You're new. They don't want you talking to people from home and telling them what you're going through. They don't want to hear about like you FaceTiming home and them telling you, oh, that's kind of fucked up what they're asking you to do or this and that, whatever. They don't want any of that. They want you to just fully sell your soul to them. You know, not actually, but you know what I mean. They want you to just fully let go of everything you were taught growing up, your own beliefs, and they want to make a Hillsong copy out of you, basically.
Okay. So wild.
Yeah. And I was really freaked out. One of my first, it was like a spiritual class. I cannot remember the name for the life of me, but it was all about like speaking in tongues and getting baptized by the Holy Spirit. And all my experiences with Pentecostal church growing up were really freaky. I didn't really like it. So that first class, they're like, hey, if you haven't spoken in tongues, you need to. We're going to baptize you all. And I was like,
wow.
I'm like, what the fuck is going on? I remember leaving that class and thinking like, oh God, did I make the wrong choice coming here?
Oh no. Yeah.
But instead of listening to that and trusting myself, I was like, nope, I'm just gonna go all in. I'm gonna do it.
Yeah, because you're there, you're like, okay, well, let's just
exactly
do it.
And then like some other stuff happened in my first year that, again, in the moment I felt uneasy about it, but I just went along with it anyways. Like, my parents ended up getting divorced my first semester at college, and
did you see that coming before you left?
Yeah, so they'd been separated for a year. But, you know, when you're religious, you're like, God can do a lot in a year. Like, they're not going to get actually divorced. They're just working through something. But I was, like, on my way to a lecture when my dad called me. And he was like, yeah, we're at the courthouse. Like, we're actually getting divorced. And I was so messed up from that. So my friends were like, you should go talk to the school counselor. It'll be totally good. That'll help you. So I went and chatted to her. And she tried to tell me I had like a minor depression and I needed to do all these different things and read these books. And I tried to read one of the books she recommended and I hated it. I was like, this is so stupid. I don't care. I'm not going to read it. And some random trainer, like when you start these sessions with a counselor there, they tell you it's completely confidential. Like, no one else is going to know what you talk about in these sessions. And a week later, one of my trainers, who I always had a really bad vibe with, like came up to me and started pressing me and asking me if I had done the things my counselor asked me to do and if I had read the book she asked me to read. And I was like, how do you know about that?
That's weird.
Like, you should not. Yeah. Like, you should not have that information. Yeah. And why are you pressuring me? It was just so uncomfortable. And I felt really gross when that happened. But again, I was like, trust the process. These people know what they're doing. It's totally fine. And then I had a lot of questions in my second year about why we do the things that we do. I started really getting into the musical and performance aspect of church. And I was like, all of this is emotional manipulation. Like, we're just making people feel something and bringing them in with this like powerful music and these really beautiful productions and the art that takes place in the church. And like, we're just manipulating them into doing what we want. And when I started asking questions about that and pressing, I got a lot of like, well, that's just an opinion. And like, God uses emotion in music. And that's why we do. And just like a lot of band-aid answers and a lot of encouragement to just keep staying. Because the longer you're here, the more you're going to learn and you're going to understand more. And yeah. So the questioning kind of started when I was in college. But again, when I got to the point where I was like, okay, maybe I don't agree with all this, someone stepped in and convinced me that it was fine. So then I stayed and I was like, okay, I'll just go along even more. And then
that's like the power of community, right? Is like, you can like find your own perspective and belief through other people and like have your opinion vetted. And then, you know, if it's part of an echo chamber, you're just going to have it mirrored.
Exactly.
Like, their opinion mirrored back to you.
Well, yeah. And it, like, I talked to so many different types of people, too, in that season of my life. But all of them were still Hillsong. So no matter what, they are taught and they're pushed to make sure that you stay the course. So it didn't matter that I was talking to people who had different opinions or different beliefs. At the end of the day, they all told me the same thing. So it really didn't matter. And, you know, you're not supposed to talk to people from home about this stuff. So it's just so, it's so silly looking back, being like, wow, that was all planned. Like, they knew what they were doing. But I was so innocent at the time. I was like, whatever, I'm just going to go with it. And then it really wasn't until I got home. And God, that's a whole I could talk for so long about that, but there was just a lot that happened in the few years after I got back that ultimately led mm-hmm. me to being like, I don't believe any of this and I need to walk away.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. So can I ask a little bit about your rock bottom moment that you were like, okay, we're done. What I know that there's like a lot to unpack there, and some of that is maybe like private information, but like, what was the piece where you like, when did it click for you, where you were like, we're not believing this stuff anymore and we can start to unravel it?
It wasn't necessarily like just one rock bottom moment. Well, it kind of was, but mm-hmm. it was like an unraveling started probably after, when I first got back to Canada. I was so gung-ho for Hillsong and I was so brainwashed. Mm-hmm. I know someone probably isn't going to like that word that I use it, but that was my experience. I feel like I was so yeah. brainwashed into thinking the only way you could be a Christian and the only way you could do church well was to do it Hillsong's way. So as soon as mm-hmm. I got back, I was like, how do I get back to Hillsong? How do I be a part of this? How can I keep up the momentum so I can stay a part of it and they right. don't forget about me? So they were doing they weren't actually church plants because it wasn't like original churches that were like springing up. They were converting to other churches into Hillsong churches. Mm-hmm. So me and a little group of people were like, okay, we're going to join. Mm-hmm. We're going to be a part of that. It's going to be awesome. I was so convinced that that's where I was supposed to go. That's where God was calling me. Like yeah. all these prophecies and words spoken over me in college about how I was going to be a right. huge part of the landscape of the Church of Canada and like a powerful leader. Like I was like, okay, this is my moment. So I did everything I could to get there, to the point where I went and I had like mm-hmm. no money. I couldn't even afford to fly myself out there. Like the people that were out there were like, we'll fly you here. Like just so you can get here, you need to be here. Yeah. And that experience lasted like 3 months till every single okay. one of us went back home. We were like, it was so bad. It was just like it felt like the curtain had been rolled back. And I always kind of knew there were problems behind the scenes. And I knew that churches that were becoming Hillsong weren't going to be perfect. But that experience for me was just so bad. And the level of disrespect I felt as a Hillsong College student coming in and being like, okay, I know what we're supposed to do. I can help you. And it was like, they didn't care, yeah. which is like, now I look back, yeah. I'm like, fine, that's totally fine. But because I was so yeah. Hillsong gung-ho, like I am Hillsong, Hillsong's the best. I was so offended and just mm-hmm. any kind of manipulation or guilting or toxicity I experienced at Hillsong College was like times 10 at this church. And it was it was so bad, such a bad experience. And my experience was nothing compared to what some of my friends experienced there. So I feel bad even saying it was bad for me. It was really not enjoyable. Right. And they treated people very poorly. So after that, I finally went back to Calgary. And at that point, I was like, mm-hmm. what the fuck? Like, what am I?
Like, what are we doing yeah. from here?
I'm like, what yeah. am I supposed to do? Yeah. I felt so lost. I ended up breaking up. Well, it was kind of mutual, but I broke up with the partner I'd been with for like 5 years on and off. Finally called it quits. I was like, yeah. okay, I guess it's time to start over. I heard rumors that they were going to start something in Vancouver. And that was kind of my motivation for getting out here at the time.
Right. You were like, let's just literally, try a different
I was so hub. Desperate.
Yeah.
I was so desperate. But it's funny because, you know, nothing that I thought was going to happen worked out. But I was so desperate to run back to Hillsong. And I think it's because I knew if I slowed down or stopped for long enough, I was going to actually accept what had happened to me at college and how traumatic it was. And I would actually have to slow down enough to talk to myself about it and be like, what just happened? And finally have a chance to ask myself the hard questions I'd been really wanting to dig into when I was in college. So I feel like a part of me subconsciously was just like, come on, keep it up, keep chasing it, or else I'm going to walk away. And that's...
Yeah. Yeah, like you hit your breaking point.
And then I was still trying, like I was holding on to hope. I was planning to move to Vancouver. I started dating a guy that wasn't religious, which was the first, like I'd never done that before, but I was just kind of in that mood where I was like, you know what? I'm just kind of done with a lot of the things I used to do, but I was still holding on to hope. And then, and then I got cheated on and it was really bad. It was...
Oh my God. Like, honestly, there's nothing worse in the world.
Like... And it wasn't one of those like, oh, I saw it coming moments for me, because in my head I thought we had a really great relationship and things were awesome. And then it was like out of the blue, no one knew why he did it. He didn't even know why he did it. His family and friends were like, that's not him. Like, it was just so random. And it broke me down so bad, but it finally, I think, stopped me enough. Like, at that point, I was like, I cannot fake this shit anymore. I can't pretend like it just, you know, when the floodgates open, you start letting out your emotions and then it just all comes out. I feel like that's what happened.
Yeah.
And after that, I finally, I think, had enough courage to be like, I'm done. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, it sounds like whatever you believe now, but it sounds like the universe was kind of like, okay, like, faucet, let's like open so we can maybe like repivot you, because it sounded like inevitably you needed to process what you'd gone through and you were not letting yourself do it until you had that crash moment.
Like
yeah,
it was so, so intense. It was such a rock bottom moment for me, because I, even like the relationship I had been in beforehand, it was on and off and it was pretty tumultuous, but like it never got to that point where I had been so utterly heartbroken and like, how could you do this to me? So when I went through that and I couldn't find a way to get myself back up, even leaning into my Bible like I was supposed to, or praying like I was supposed to, I was like, this is bullshit. It's not doing anything for me. And not that, like, I love my family. I still love them, even though they're religious. But their response to that breakup, to that guy cheating on me, they responded with such like loving grace. Like, my dad texted him and was like, still love you, like, totally believe in you, like, God forgives you. And I had a really, cool. I had a
that's not cool, by the way, when I say, I had cool,
a really hard time sarcasm. With that.
Yeah, that feels like a 100%. Betrayal as well.
I remember feeling like, oh, so you offer this stranger, really, that cheated on me, more grace and forgiveness and love than you've ever offered me when I've fucked up. And that also was a turning point for me. I was like, okay, it's so fake. All of this is so fake. And then I kind of started on that deconstruction journey. And then it kind of felt like maybe it was just my Instagram or whatever, but it felt like everyone was deconstructing at that same time. And I was like, oh, I'm not the only one. Like, it just, all of a sudden, I was seeing all these other people being like, I need to start unpacking this. I need to start ripping this apart until I figure out what I actually believe. And when I started going down that path, I was left with like, oh, there's nothing left that I believe in.
Yeah. Okay. So when you had your rock bottom, you started to see people deconstructing. So that must have been really helpful. What can I ask, like, when this was? Because I think there was like a collective type of unfolding.
Yeah. It was 2020. It was the end of 2020 for me. It was like August, September.
Okay. And I think it would have been really brave to put yourself out there on social media that your beliefs were changing. So, like, was that like an outlet for you, or was like, when did you start posting?
I kept it quiet for a really long time, but I also just kind of reclused into myself at that point. Like, I pushed a lot of people away. I was like, I don't want to talk to any. It was kind of that, like, being on my own and figuring it out for myself for the first time in my entire life, because part of what my religious upbringing did was force me to tell everybody everything always. It's never like, oh, I need to look into myself and find out what I believe. It's like, no, you can't trust yourself. Don't trust your gut. Don't trust your own feelings. You need to like talk to your pastor, and whatever your pastor says is what you should do, or talk to your parents and whatever they say is what you should do. Like, it was always on other people to make decisions for me, that at that point I was like, I need to do this on my own, away from everybody else. So I kept it pretty private for a while. And then I kind of just wanted to see what certain friends or certain people would think. So I gathered like a random close friends list on my Instagram.
Oh, yes.
And I just started putting polls out there. Like, what do you guys actually think about sex before marriage? What do you guys actually think about homosexuality? What do you guys actually think? And it was a lot of people who I knew from college, Christian, just a huge group of them, and started doing all these different polls. And what I found was pretty much everybody felt the same way I did, but they still were going to church, still called themselves a Christian, and that just frustrated the hell out of me.
Yeah, because you're like, how can you actually not believe this, but you're still advocating for it, or like those two things just don't align based on the teachings that you and I experienced, which was like extreme purity teachings and homophobia.
Yeah, we need to get into purity culture after this, because that was just, oh my God. But eventually, I think it was, I want to say earlier in 2022, I finally got the courage. I was really scared for a long time. I didn't tell anybody that I had walked away, didn't tell anyone that I wasn't religious. I didn't even tell my family, because they're still quite religious. And I was scared because it's such a huge part. That's the thing when it comes to religion and Christianity, is it's not just a part of someone's life. It's their whole life. So for me, I'm like, okay, I can separate that and still be your friend. But I had a lot of friends who I knew if I openly said, I don't believe this, they wouldn't be able to continue in that relationship with me because it would be too hard. So I finally did. I think it was the like ask me an anonymous question thing on Instagram. That was the thing last year.
Oh, yes. That wasn't that long ago.
Someone full on asked me, they were like, do you still believe in God? And I had that moment where I was like, I could lie and I could be like, oh, I'm figuring it out. But I just entered my I don't give a fuck era, pretty much.
Yeah.
And that's where I've been the last 2 years. And so I was like, fuck it. I don't care if you don't like the fact that I don't. I have family members that are on my Instagram that like responded with broken hearts and like sad faces and praying for you shit. But I just said it. I was like, no, I don't believe it. I don't. And all hell broke loose at that point. And I was like, well, it's out there now.
Oh, my God. It's out there. You ripped the Band-Aid off. So, okay, yeah. What was, like, did your immediate family find out through that? Or did they?
Yeah, they did.
Yeah, they did. Oh, wow. Okay, and what was their response?
Oh, they didn't say anything. They still don't say anything, because that would just be, I don't know, mate.
Too much. It's just too much. Especially when your parents have, like, brought you up for, like, you know, how many years old you are, 20 plus years, 25 plus years. And you're just like, and they're probably like, what have we done? Like, you know, and I think like that's the thing, is like a lot of families bring their kids up in Christianity as a structure of morality and peacemaking. And like, are like, we, this was the best thing that we thought we could do for you. And for you to walk away is hard for us. So really respect you and like feel a lot for you for like putting it out there. I have like my parents kind of know that I'm not involved, but like I think they just dance around it.
It's nice because my mom isn't religious anymore. So she was at least one family member that was like, I'm so proud of you, and supported me through all of it and kept telling me like, keep your head up. Don't give a fuck about what anybody else says. Like just always follow your heart and what you want. So I'm really grateful for that. And then honestly, even my dad, I love my dad so much, because he got to a point where he was like, I don't care what you believe. I don't care what you do or do not follow. Like, it doesn't matter to me anymore. You're my daughter and I love you. So yeah, both of them actually ended up responding really well. And I mean, I'm sure it's really hard for my dad still, because he's very religious. And when it comes to like both sets of my grandparents, I haven't told them. And I don't know if someone else has, because maybe it like through the web of communication has got to them, but I can imagine it would. I don't want to flaunt it to them, because like I said, it's so tied to who they are and their life and the trauma they've been through, that I would never disrespect them in that way by saying like, oh, I don't believe what you believe. Never.
Yeah. I feel that like my grandparents and I are very close, and they also are very religious, like, and they're very like self soul seeking people. And I think if they were to find out that I don't, like, I have this podcast, I think it would be really hard for them, you know? So I think for me, like, standing outside of it, I'm like, I'm just proud of myself for being able to be introspective. And I think that if they knew the essence of that, they would be proud of it too. Cause like I watch them being introspective, but it is so tied to that generation's identity and that peace that they have, like, in the last couple of years of their lives. So it's tricky.
It's so hard. And I'm not very close with either sets of my grandparents, unfortunately, because of distance, but also because of how intense their belief system is, that there's no way I could have a conversation about any of this with them because it would be shut down immediately and they would just want to pray for me probably.
Yeah.
So it makes me sad because I wish I had a closer relationship with them, and not even just them. Like, there's some friends from college. There's some friends I have that are still involved in Hillsong. And what breaks my heart is some of them can't even have this conversation with me and admit that they agree with a lot of the problems I have with Hillsong and religion. They do feel all the same ways, but I'll have friends who are like, we can't talk about this anymore because I know if I keep talking to you about this, I'm going to leave, and I can't.
Yeah, so it's like what I've noticed with that is like sometimes people in your life will come and like open a floodgate for you, and like they have to be ready, right? Like, and if they're already thinking, they're already on that path, and who knows what their spirituality is going to look like. But it's just like a matter of time in most situations when people start to unpack that. And for some people, the security of like survival mode, it's too important for them to stay in those, like they have to stay in those communities and have to safeguard against that. So like, I really don't think it's personal, you know, it's just inevitable. Exactly. And it's super
and it's sad, but I'm like, I can understand that because I remember what it felt like to be on the inside and needing it to be real. And like desperately, absolutely fighting against anything that would say otherwise.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, let's pivot to purity culture. Yes. They're so tied together, but like originally that's why I was like, oh my gosh. So like, what was your experience growing up with your sexuality? And like, you have been a bit more of a serial dater than me. You are engaged. Thank you. Congratulations. Oh my God. So cute. I'm so excited for you. But like, what has your experience been with sexuality?
Oh my God. Sexuality was like non-existent for me growing up. It was absolutely more than taboo. Like, my parents didn't talk to me about sexuality. I'm about to out myself so hard here. Oh my God. I hope everyone still loves me after. But like, I didn't even know what a penis looked like until I was in high school.
Wow.
Right?
I don't know if I did either.
Didn't even look at my own vulva. Like, I literally was so like, I don't look at myself. I don't touch myself. I am like, because from when I was so young, it was taught to me that like sexuality is a huge sin. It's wrong. And so I was like, oh my God, I need to stay as far away from sexuality as possible. And the other fucked up part about growing up in purity culture as a woman, well, as a girl at the time, is being constantly taught that it's my body that's the problem. So I'm a woman, which means I, for some reason, my body is more sexual than a man's. And it's my fault if my brothers stumble. So I need to be the one protecting men. I need to cover up my body. I need to be the one that doesn't put a man in a bad situation. Like, all that pressure's on me, all the pressure's on my purity. So, I mean, I read all those cringy Christian books when I was little about like me having to save myself for marriage, because if I had sex before marriage, I'm impure. We did exercises at fucking youth group where it would be like, here's a white piece of paper, crumple it up. Does it look the same now? No, that's you if you have sex before marriage. Like, all this traumatizing shit to kids. And it, oh my God, it makes me so mad. So when I finally did, my first boyfriend was the guy I was with for 5 years. And we like, he was the first guy I did anything with. And it was like every time we pushed the line or did anything or like kind of like, that's when I first was like, oh my God, I am totally a sexual person. And I never knew before because it feels like I was robbed of that normal adolescent, you know, growing up phase of life where you're like learning about your sexuality. You're learning what you like and you don't like. You're figuring out what you're attracted to. Like, I didn't have that because it was like I barred that part of myself off to be a good Christian.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So when I did start exploring, it was like the guilt and shame that I felt after everything I did was enormous. Mm-hmm. And I thought that that was God saying, well, you're not supposed to be doing this. So I was like, I deserve that. I deserve to feel like shit.
Right. Okay. Yes. Yeah. I had the exact same experience. I think it was my second boyfriend and we were like fooling around kind of like by that. I mean like making out, like literally. And I think there was like a shirt off at a point, and then I felt so guilty that I was like, okay, we gotta wrap this up, and I was like, I gotta go, and we broke up like right after. I was like, I can't handle this, like, because this means that like everything that I have taught, but like been teaching other people and like believe like is all in jeopardy. Yep. And I could go to hell. And it was like truly what I believed. And I remember like we finally broke up. And months later, there was this rumor around the school, high school, and it was that, like, Jill's like the Bible girl. Oh, my God. So that's why they broke up. And yeah, I was like, true. Yeah. Yeah. And he was talking shit about me, and I was like, I'm just trying to do, like,
yes,
what I thought was right. And I don't – and also, like, people chat, you know, and I think, like, growing up in a Christian school, like – if you do something with someone,
everybody,
like, everybody knows it because it's so taboo and it's not normalized. And so, like, everyone finds out
and then like, everyone just thinks less of you.
Yeah.
Because they all know the rules. Yeah. They all know what we're supposed to do and what we're not. And as soon as you're the one who does it, it's like, oh,
yeah. Well. Yeah. Yeah. So, okay. When did you, like, how has purity culture kind of like stuck with you, and like how have you been able to kind of unravel it slash where
that is such a good question. Purity culture really fucked me up. Like, I have said this to so many people, but I truly believe purity culture enables rape culture. And I had some really uncomfortable experiences in college where I was trying, like I said, I was a lot like you. Like, we have so many similarities, and that's one too. Like, I was trying so hard to do the right thing at all times, but I'm also a sexual human being. So I get horny. I have like urges. Yeah. And so anytime I'd give into them, I'd feel like shit. Yeah. And then I was also with someone who like wanted those things too, and then would make me feel bad if I didn't also want to do those things, or would say like I wasn't attracted to him, or like all this stuff. And I was like, that's not the case. I'm just trying really hard here to do the right thing. And we had a lecture one time in college where a pastor was up there. She was talking about marriage. And she said, women, you have 24 hours to say no to your husband, and then you owe him sex. She literally said to all of us, she's like, ladies in the room, just so you know, when you're married, you can only have a headache for 24 hours. She was like, after 24 hours, your excuses are gone, and you need to have sex with your husband. And the guy I was with, like, I'm not trying to talk shit. I think he's a great guy, whatever. Like, we didn't end on bad terms. Yeah. But I remember him looking over at me with this, like, sly grin on his face because and I felt so scared. Like, I felt really afraid, and I thought, holy shit, is that what marriage is? Because I don't want to have sex all the time. And when I don't want to have sex, you're telling me I am not allowed to say no to my husband? That really scared me. Yeah.
That is scary. I've heard like similar teachings too, which was crazy because like I used to attend Tequila, and I remember they would always like, there's always like one time a year where they do love and romance and sex, which is February. And I find that a lot of these churches are uncomfortable having one person speak on the mic. So what they do is they bring up a panel. Mm-hmm. That is a strategy I've seen time and time and time again. So they bring up this panel. They have an anonymous question box, and the pastor will like have a live discussion about it. And I remember one time of the many times I've seen this happen that the guy who was on stage was just like, yeah, like if you want to be a good wife, you need to have sex with your husband. Like, to hold back from him is to, you know, like, he used that verse where it was like, like, wives be obedient they love to your husband is like Christ is obedient to the church. So they were like, you have to do this because he's going to do this for you when you're horny, obviously. But like, you have to do this because you got to keep your marriage bed strong, right? Well, that was the whole sentiment. And I was like, okay. And like, little naive me who had never had sex before, had like never had any experiences, was like, awesome. I'm going to put this down in my like list of to-dos, is that when I get married, I will be the woman who never says no to sex, because I want to make sure that like my person is happy. And it's like, brings up this topic of like this really taboo subject, which is like sex in the marriage container, like and consent in the marriage container. Like, just because you're married does not mean that that's consensual sex all the time. Like, 100%. You can be raped within a marriage. And so that's like the scariest thing, because like, I'm sure that's happened to many females, especially when you're conditioned to say like, this is like my wife, my wifely duty to have sex whenever my husband wants. And then the fear is that you're going to lose
the marriage. And it's your fault as the woman.
Right? Because there's the thing with – and it's your fault. And, like, the thing with purity culture, too, is it's so fear-based. It's basically, like, okay, like, if you save yourself a marriage, you will be blessed with a good marriage. So it continues past getting married, right? It's like if you have to continue saying yes despite your body in order to receive the blessings of that
and
marriage.
And it's so scary. It's so traumatizing. And I found even after, like, when I was in a relationship with a guy after I left the church, well, I was still kind of in it, but like, those messages don't stop once you start questioning the church. And even now, I find myself still really having to fight that urge of like, it's my job to please my husband. Well, he's not my husband yet, but like, even now, like in a completely, like I have, there's no religion left in my life. That's not a part of my life. I don't believe it, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But that trauma from being a kid and feeling like I have to be the one to make sure I'm not like too sexual with other people, or like I have to be the one making sure that like my husband is well pleased. Like the best thing, the best feeling is being able to say no when my partner wants to have sex with me, and like being able to be like, no, I don't feel like it, and not feeling like shit about it, and not feeling fear of like, oh, well, now he's gonna go somewhere else for that. It's like, because that's something that sticks with you. And I've heard stories of like Christian friends who've gotten married and they're Christian and they have followed all the rules and they still feel that guilt and shame even after getting married and doing all the right things. It's like, yeah, because it's not real. That whole lie they tell you about like, it's going to be so horrible. It's going to be so bad unless you're married, or like, you're going to feel like shit after, but if you're married, you're going to feel amazing. It's not true. Like,
yeah, it's like full on script. They're like, I remember this one guy at church too being like, Rolling Stones just came out with an article that said Christians have the best
sex.
That
is a lie. And I was like,
that's a fucking lie.
Yeah, sorry.
That was a lie from the grave. And it's like, people use like stats like that to just coerce people into thinking stuff. Like, you can have a beautiful sexual relationship with someone who you align with who isn't part of an 100% institution like Christianity. Like, you.
Yeah.
That's insane. And but that's like, that's what got me. It was like, I wanted to have the best relationship. And I think that's what gets a lot of people, is like, they want to have the best relationship that they can.
Yeah. Isn't
that's kryptonite for everyone. So like,
well, and like the, when I did have sex, like after Hillsong, after college, and I was like, you know what, fuck it, I'm doing what I want. I remember being a little worried because I was still on the fence about Christianity. I was like, oh my God, am I going to feel like shit after this? And I felt fine. I felt fine. I was like, oh, totally, that was great. I don't know what they were talking about. I didn't go to hell. I don't feel shame. Like, I feel awesome. That was fantastic. So at that point, I was like, all right, if that's bullshit, the rest of it's bullshit too. And that's when I really started experimenting with like whatever I wanted. I'm like, do I feel like doing this? Do I feel like doing that? Like, I remember when I like got on Tinder for the first time, and everyone was like, all my friends who were still Christian were like, oh, you can't do, don't do that. And I was like, fuck you. I'm doing whatever I want to do. And it was fantastic. Like, there's,
that's awesome.
The hard part about what really gets me is like that there are still kids, there's still girls being raised in church that think and are being taught to not have any bodily autonomy. They're being taught that they're the problem, that their body is the problem. And like the fact that I didn't masturbate until like fucking college, like towards the end of college was the first time I ever was like, oh, I'm going to try this because I was so scared of my own body. And like the fact that I could never make a single decision for myself, I always had to ask like 20 different people before I made a decision because I didn't trust myself. That's been the hardest part about walking away and now finding myself is like learning how to trust myself and trust my body, what my body's telling me. Cause I've never in my life before listened to my body or listened to my gut, listened to what I'm feeling, because that was always taught to me as being wrong or evil or untrustworthy. So purity culture is so dangerous because we're teaching young girls that they're the problem and that men don't need to be held accountable because men are just weak. Men are like, oh, I have these sexual urges. And if you're just like a skank or whatever they used to call it, like, then you're the reason that I stumble. And so we're teaching girls that they're responsible for how a man acts. And we're teaching men who are in the church that they have no accountability. No, there's nothing on them when it comes to their sexuality. It's like they're just these uncontrollable horn dogs that will stick their penis in anything if it's there. Like, and that's not true.
That's insane. That's insane. And okay, I recently just found out that blue balls isn't a real thing.
No, it's not fucking real.
I can't. Like, literally, the amount of times. Yes. Like, sorry, the amount of times. Like, I remember, like, being intimate with someone, and, like, it was at the time where I hadn't, like, gone all the way with someone. So I was like, you know, like, I don't want to continue. Like, I was like, this is, like, as far as I'm willing to go. And he was like, oh, blue balls. And I was like,
oh, my God.
And then, like, now me having sex with someone, I'm like, wait, but they can't even figure out me properly. Like, yes. I'm not even getting off because of this. And yes. I'm not complaining about blue balls for myself. Like,
yep.
The fuck? So it's just, it's so crazy. Like, I...
And that's probably the two... Sorry to cut you off if I did.
No.
That's the other crazy part about purity culture is it teaches girls that, like, it's our whole job to please a man or else he'll leave. But we're not teaching men to please women. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. Like, the orgasm gap is fucked up. The amount of men that I've been with that have no fucking clue what to do for a woman, how to please a woman, and are just expecting them, like, it's like sex is for them. And I'm like, it's not. Sorry. It's also not my job to make you feel good. We're both responsible for our own pleasure. And that, like, that's something no man in the church has ever seemed to figure out in my experience. But, like, when I finally reached out, branched out, accepted that I wasn't a Christian, wasn't religious, and started being with men who weren't, I was like, oh, these are the men I need in my life.
I love that. That's that's fun. Yeah. Okay. So you've been on a journey finding a certification in life coaching and in the Enneagram stuff too. Do you want to share a little bit about what you've done post Hillsong and, like, your life has shaped?
Yeah, I think I was still really hell-bent on, like, needing to change the world and needing to help people. So originally when I first graduated, I was like, okay, I'm going to be a therapist. Mm. And then I started looking into that and I was like, nope, I hate that. I think maybe I'll go, like, the life coaching route because then I can just chat to people. It's not as intense. It's not like having to sit down with people and bear all this, like, really intense stuff and help them through it because I'm still working on myself and I don't think I can handle that. So I went through and I got my life coaching certification. And even by the end of that, I was like, you know what? I don't think this is for me either because I was told, like, you need to match their energy. You need to do all this. And I was like, I don't really want to just sit here and, like, no offense, because I love people that are able to do this. But for me, I was like, I can't just sit here and watch you try and struggle through to find the answer when I already know what could potentially help you, but I'm not allowed to say. So that was not for me either. I started, like, a wellness page on Instagram when I thought I was going to be a life coach and ended up deciding, like, you know what? I'm not using that for that. I don't want to coach people. I'm not interested. Mm-hmm. Really, all I want to share about is how I'm living through my life now. And what's really been helpful is just starting to share about my life identity with people on Instagram. I'll do anonymous questions because I know how hard it is to put yourself out there when you're still under the banner of religion, but trying to figure it out. So I found that putting anonymous questions out for people so that they can ask me what the journey was like or, like, what I'm really going through, what I'm for me, that's really helped. And that's kind of my outlet now. And I'll share things every once in a while. That's not the focus for me. And it's kind of a long story. I'll make it short because we're coming to the end of our time. But, like, I finally came full circle for myself. I've always loved working with kids. I've always loved being in childcare, but I went through, like, a huge feminist kick when I was in college because I hated the idea of having to be the good Christian housewife. I didn't want to be that. I didn't want to cook and clean and just bear babies for my husband. Like, that was not what I wanted at all. Tried to run away from childcare and then ended up working at a childcare center when I was in Australia. And it was my favorite job ever. I loved it so much that now I'm actually pursuing my ECE. I work at a childcare center.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah. Care center here in Vancouver. And I really love it. It's such a great job. And I no longer feel this weird, like, oh, well, yeah, of course you're doing that because it's your womanly duty. I'm like, no, I'm doing this because I love it. And I find meaning. I love helping kids. I love the job. So that's what I'm pursuing for now. And then, you know, who knows what happens on top of that. Nutrition training. My partner's actually getting his personal certification training right now. So kind of, like, in the future, it would be really cool to open our own gym.
That would be really cool.
Yeah, that's kind of the plan.
Yeah, because you guys have been crushing F45. Like, I'm so inspired.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. No, it's been really fun to watch. I love it. So, okay, I want to ask you, like, what has been the most helpful tool or thing that you've gravitated towards to, like, find your intuition and keep your own authentic self, like, going, because we've been so conditioned, you know, to, like, not go to ourselves. Like, how do you keep coming back?
Hilariously enough, working out, like, at 45 has changed the game for me, because it's the first time I experienced being fully in my body and not in my head. Like, pushing myself to do a workout is, like, the best thing for my mental health and to get me out of, like, out of all shit and back into my body. And the other thing I do with myself pretty regularly is I have this promise to myself that I won't lie to myself. So in any situation, I force myself to be absolutely honest, no matter what. So if I'm doing something and I don't feel good, I have to tell myself the truth. Like, doing this, I'm going home. It's really hard because sometimes it's something as simple as, like, we have dinner plans with my fiance's parents and I'm just really not, I'm just not in the mood. I had a hard day.
Wow.
And I've forced myself to now go, I think I need to stay home tonight because I don't feel good. Or like, even something as simple as, like, when I feel like crying, I have to cry. I don't let myself hold it in anymore. I have to let it out, because as soon as I start holding it in, it's like my body wants to let it out and I'm forcing it in, and that's against what my body wants in that moment. Learning to live in my body, doing yoga and meditation really, really helped, because it's slowing my mind down. And again, like, listening to my body, I'm doing body scans. I'm, like, really feeling and listening to what my body's telling me. Stuff like that.
I love.
Yeah.
This is amazing. I think those are such good takeaways for people. And I mean, I need to embody this, like, being brutally honest with yourself, because, like, I think it's fun that you're going towards nutrition and stuff. I think just, like, your body communicates so much for you. So, like, everyone in the world that I talk to knows that I have SIBO right now, which is, like, a gut thing. But, like, for me, I'm like, hey, what is the emotional cause of this? Like, where did this come from? And, like, it's so blatantly obvious to me. It's unprocessed emotion and trauma.
Oh my God. Yep.
Like, it's just like, I know what it is. And I'm like, okay, so, like, how am I going to, like, cry it out and, like, let myself be real? But, like, being caught up in the hustle and bustle of the world, like, it's hard for me to be honest, and it's hard for me to advocate for myself. And so I think that's why I'm still kind of processing through it. So I have a lot to learn from you.
No, I'm still, I'm still struggling. Like, it's really hard. Some days I am pretty good at it, and other days I find myself lying to myself or keeping it in because I want to please other people. But it's also, as soon as I start doing that, my mental health declines instantly. I start feeling like shit. I start feeling depressed. I don't feel good. And I know it's because I'm keeping shit in. Like, if, even if it's little things with my fiance, it's like, if I don't say it, I'm going to keep it in. And then, like, a week later, I'm going to be so pissed off at him. And all we have to do is have one conversation where I, like, let everything out that I'm feeling. And I'm like, oh, wow, that's all it was. Like, I just can't. I can't hide stuff anymore. I spent my life hiding what I was really feeling from my family, hiding what I really wanted, hiding all of these sinful desires I had. And now I'm like, no, I refuse to do that any longer for a second more in my life. My life's way too precious. And I know how much better I feel when I'm just, when I'm honest with myself. So,
That's really cool. That's awesome. Cool. Well, Alyssa, this was amazing to have you. I feel like we should have a second part.
Yeah.
Like, there's just so much we could talk about. So let's, like, do another one in the future.
100%. I feel like we just scratched the surface of what we could get into.
Yeah. I'm so excited. I'm going to have to come out to Vancouver to come see you.
Yes.
Is what I'm thinking.
I mean, hopefully we'll be in Calgary. Hopefully we'll be in Calgary.
Oh, yes, please. The next time you guys are here, let me know.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was so good to chat. Where can the listeners find you if they are searching for you?
My Instagram page, my personal one, is just Alyssa Cherkoff. And my wellness page is Alyssa Wellness. Super easy.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'll link them down below and they can ask you any questions there.
Perfect.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on today.
Thanks for having me. This was so much fun.
Thank you. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.